Most young people today would have no idea who Tennessee Ernie Ford was or what he did. It's kind of amazing that so many of the stars of yesteryear are nearly forgotten within a generation or two. In his heyday, Ernie Ford was the highest paid personality in primetime American television. His records sold in the millions and his concerts sold out. He hobnobbed with presidents and celebrities of all sorts and was a major celebrity himself. His real name was Ernest Jennings Ford, but everybody knew him as Tennessee Ernie, King of the Pea Pickers. He was part comedian, part pop singer, part gospel singer, part television show host, part rancher, part hillbilly, and, well, pretty much part anything he cared to be. He was an intelligent man with a classic baritone voice, but many of his fans were certain that he was a hillbilly's hillbilly. If young people today know of him at all, it's probably for one of two reasons. First, he was immortalized by a two-part guest-starring role on the I Love Lucy show, playing Lucy's hillbilly cousin, of course. And secondly, he recorded a song which became a mega bestseller called 16 Tons. You can still hear this song played on oldies stations with its famous lyrics, "You load 16 tons and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store." Ernie Ford was different from many celebrities then and now in that he was never particularly ambitious to make it as a star. His son Jeffrey Ford penned a touching biography of Ernie and wrote, "Dad didn't land in Hollywood by design. He didn't come to town with stars in his eyes, dreaming of being discovered at Schwab's. He never pounded the pavement looking for an agent or a break, never camped out at Central Casting, never worked as an extra hoping for a line or a close-up, didn't do time in a chorus line, and was never anybody's second banana. It simply happened. I fell into this business," was the simplest way he could put it. Ford was part of what we now commonly call the Greatest Generation. He grew up during the Great Depression, served in the military during World War II, and rose to fame in the giddy post-war prosperity of the 1950s. He did so many things well, it was hard to place him in a single category. And nearly all that he did easily, making it appear effortless. In addition to his many talents, Ernie Ford was downright likable, with a charisma that shone brightly through radio and television, as well as in his personal life and relationships. Ernie's affability enhanced his singing and acting talents and accounted for much of his success. Ernie's first experience with the entertainment world was quite modest. He began as a radio disc jockey. His deep, rich voice and his amiable gift of gab made him a natural. In fact, he was such a natural that he soon became bored with doing radio the traditional way. Always a bit of an innovator, Ford engaged in certain practices that were just never done. One of them was the strange habit of singing along with many of the songs through his live mic. Even though the song might have been originally sung as a solo, with Ford chiming in, it became a duet. Almost no disc jockey but Ernie could have gotten away with this, but in Ernie's case it worked. Of course, it helped that he had a magnificent voice, far superior to many of the singers whose records he was playing. Not only did he have a great voice, he had studied voice at the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music. Additionally, he had near-perfect ability to harmonize with a lead singer. The end result was that most of his listeners actually enjoyed and preferred the Ernie Ford-enhanced songs. Ernie's creative mind was always churning, and at one point in his disc jockey career, he came up with an idea that would in some way affect his career for the rest of his life. Ernie Ford decided to create a hillbilly persona for a 30-minute program each day. During this time period, he created a hillbilly twang and style perfected to such an extent that nearly all his audience assumed that the station had just hired a new part-time disc jockey straight from the hills of Tennessee. Tennessee Ernie was the loud, goofy, over-the-top proprietor of the Bar Nothing Ranch. It wouldn't fly today, but the corny caricature worked beautifully in that simpler time. It was different, it was lively, and it was an immediate hit. After the 30-minute program was over, Ford reverted to his normal radio persona, Ernest Ford, and very few people realized that Ernest and Tennessee Ernie were one and the same. However, in a very short time, Tennessee Ernie surpassed Ernest in popularity and fame, which no doubt produced in Ernie some mixed feelings. In his early DJ days, Ford worked at smaller radio stations. But his life took an abrupt change when a man named Loyal King, owner of one of Southern California's most popular and powerful stations, heard his 30-minute hillbilly shtick while driving. King was so impressed he had to meet this radio hillbilly and arrange an appointment with Ford. King was surprised to learn that Tennessee Ernie, the hillbilly, was the same person as Ernest Ford, the articulate DJ and newscaster with the beautiful singing voice. But this impressed him all the more, and he immediately offered Ford a job with his station. Ernie, however, had just landed a job with another smaller station and had to turn him down. But King kept in touch and kept the pressure on until finally, Ernie Ford moved to Pasadena and took a position with the powerful and influential KXLA radio station. The rest is history. With the opportunity to reach a far larger audience than ever before, the amiable, innovative radio personality with the incredible singing voice saw a meteoric rise in popularity that soon went beyond Southern California and even beyond the shores of America. Jeffrey Ford writes, "Between 1948 and 1954, Dad did 5 years as a staff announcer at KXLA, signed with Capitol Records in 1949, hosted a national radio series for ABC for 2 years, signed for a coast-to-coast national radio series for CBS for 2 years, became the first Capitol act to headline the London Palladium, recorded 3 number-one singles, guest starred in the first 2-part I Love Lucy episode ever filmed, played more than 700 live dates in clubs from the Copa to the Thunderbird, became the first guest host for NBC's College of Musical Knowledge, and signed with the network for his own daily television series to begin in January 1955. In 7 short, blistering, blurred years, he went from being a locally known DJ in Pasadena to being one of the most popular entertainers on 2 continents. Queen Elizabeth told the Daily Mail that he was her favorite singer. When Ernie went on air with his own television variety program in 1956, his star rose even higher. The program was produced by the Ford Motor Company, no relation, and in the first weeks they tried to micromanage every aspect of the programs. They provided Ford canned jokes, straight men to stand alongside him, and urged him to be a little more sophisticated. None of it worked. Ford made it clear that he needed to do the show his way, just as he'd always done in his radio days. Finally, the producers relented and let Ernie be Ernie, and the show took off, landing consistently among the top 5 TV programs in the Nielsen ratings. Celebrities of all stripes were eager to appear as guests, knowing that the eyes of the nation would be upon them. And could he ever sell cars? In those days, it was expected that the variety show hosts would serve as pitchmen for the companies that produced their programs. In Ernie's case, the products were Fairlanes, Thunderbirds, Galaxies, and other Ford models. The man from Tennessee was so affable, so sincere, and so utterly natural that people believed him when he told them that life was far better from behind the steering wheel of a new Ford automobile. The auto company, seeing Ernie as a valuable asset, reciprocated and made him the highest-paid variety show host in television. The money poured in, and Ernie Ford became a celebrity right up there with Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, Jerry Lewis, and Dean Martin. Life was good, at least professionally. On the home front, it was a different matter. To understand why I've titled this Devo, Tennessee Ernie Ford, A Sad Life, we must go back to his World War II days and learn of the lady who became Mrs. Ernie Ford. When Ernie was sent to Victorville Army Base in Southern California, there were about 1,000 other male recruits there, and exactly 1 female on the entire base. Her name was Betty Heminger, and she worked there as a civilian secretary. She was extremely pretty, very smart, and could have had her pick of any of the unattached men with whom she constantly interacted. As she got to know Ernie, she was quickly impressed. He was good-looking, although not movie star handsome, but the thing that impressed her the most was the nature of the man. He had an easy, friendly way that made him almost irresistible. The same charisma that would eventually make him a world-renowned celebrity worked its charms on the pretty young secretary. After a bit of flirting, he asked her out. She said yes without reservation. She sensed this man was no wolf looking for prey. She instinctively felt he was a genuinely good guy, which indeed Ernie Ford was. They were married within 4 months of their first date. We often say that opposites attract, and never was this more true than in the joining of Ernie Ford and Betty Himinger in marriage. They were both humans, they both lived on planet Earth, but other than that, they could hardly have been more different. Differences can be exciting and intriguing in the early stages of romance and infatuation, but once the rings are exchanged and the years begin to roll by, those differences can lead to huge problems if they're not dealt with and compromises are not made. Ernie Ford was easygoing, laid back, and not particularly ambitious. Betty had a nervous temperament, was easily upset, worried constantly, and was highly driven. Betty was artistic by nature, and in her early days, she dreamed of being a celebrity herself, but she soon realized that her husband would be the real star of the family, the one with whom everybody wanted to be seen and to schmooze. And while Ernie was not the hillbilly he sometimes portrayed, he did have a preference for blue jeans, ranches, and country life over the glitz and glamour of Hollywood rhinestones and avant-garde ways. Betty, on the other hand, despised traditional styles and values and leaned hard left in politics, in philosophy, and in style. Although there seemed to be genuine love and affection between the two, in time their polar opposite ways and preferences brought about a growing distance and alienation. One thing they did have in common was that they both drank. But Betty drank far more than Ernie and became a full-fledged alcoholic while still relatively young. The combination of alcohol, emotional instability, a red-hot temper, depression, and a tendency to blame all her problems on those around her, primarily her husband, eventually made Ernie Ford's life a living hell. The likable, funny, outgoing radio and television personality known and loved by millions had a home life that was the exact opposite of the image he projected in public. Although there were brief respites when their initial love and affection would resurface, those times would quickly pass and the darkness would resume. It was anything but funny.